A couple people are aware now, but I wanted to start out by saying that God has blessed my family and I. We're expecting baby number 4 this September. So, yeah, this is definitely a blessing. So thank you. And the title of my sermon, just in case, I bore anyone, I'll give you the title up front. And that way, if you fall asleep at the end, you'll know what I talked about and we'll be all good. But the title of my sermon is, When You're Down Your Last Grenade, Don't Give Up Your Faith or the Fight. And there's a story behind that. So I was in the Army for about 6 years, 3 deployments to Afghanistan. And my first deployment, I was there for about a month. I was a machine gunner in Kandahar. And at one point during that time, very new guy, very green, we were on patrol. We do about a week-long patrol where we just go out, walk around the sector, see what was going on, get shot at, shoot back, and then, try to live the fight another day. But during one of those times, it was, we had decided this is where we were going to set up our patrol base for the night. We started to dig in. I set up my machine gun. And the way we would set up is you'd have your main patrol base and then your machine gun, you'd always set up at the most likely area where the enemy is going to attack you. That way you have your firepower where the enemy is going to attack you, which is a smart thing to do, but it also can lead to some hairy situations if you're a machine gunner. So just as the sun's starting to set, they do the call to prayer, and we always kind of tensed up at the evening call to prayer and the morning call to prayer, because that was their favorite times to attack. And that night, they do the call to prayer, nothing happens, about an hour passes, and we start getting shot at a little bit. It's getting a little bit darker, and they keep shooting at us. So we figured they actually wanted to fight. So I was in there in my machine gun nest, and I had about 200 rounds of ammunition, which is the standard amount that I would carry. Well, when they started shooting at us, my ammunition bearer, the guy who had 1,200 rounds of ammo, which is quite a good bit to have on you, he was all the way on the other side of that small patrol base we had set up. And I'm in there with 200 rounds of ammo, and I start shooting back, and I see, start thinking in the back of my head, I see these links going out the other side. I'm like, all right, I hope they weren't planning on making this a long ordeal, because I'm going to run out of ammo here pretty soon. So I, my links are counting down, and I see I only really have about 50 rounds of ammunition left, which if you have a machine gun, 50 rounds, you're out, you're dry. So 50 rounds of machine gun ammo left, 2 grenades, and a pistol with 18 rounds of ammo. And I can start seeing these guys, they were in kind of like a built-up green zone, probably about 80 meters away from me. And I could start seeing them crawling up in the woods, like coming up close to me. And I'm out of ammo. I holler back to my squad. I'm like, hey, guys, I'm out of ammo. My squad leader just says, hold tight, we'll get you some in a little bit. And, it was at that point in my life, that was the most intense situation I had been in. It would have been very easy for me to, to lose the faith, to kind of panic a little bit. And I just thought, I have 2 grenades and we'll figure it out. And I just remember thinking to God, I got these 2 grenades. I don't have too much of an arm. I wasn't a baseball player. I played football. I'm like, all right, I'll throw one of them. And then, the guys we were fighting, not the nicest people in the world, so I'll throw one of them, and then I'll keep this one on me and wait till they get close and go out with a bang instead of getting captured and being on CNN and whatever would have happened. And so I throw the 1 grenade, and it's quiet for about 5 minutes, and then they start shooting at me, and I'm just thinking to myself, all right, I've got to just hold this down until you get more ammo or until it's time to go. And during that whole time, I'd be lying if I didn't say I was extremely nervous. It's a scary situation, but I never thought all right, this is it. I always thought I'll find a way. And long story, obviously it all worked out because I'm here, but but long story short, it was a very difficult situation, especially for someone so green in their experience. And my squad leader ended up getting me out the ammo and ended up working out pretty well for us. So, pretty good situation. Once we fought through that night, woke up the next morning, we figured, we're in a good spot. We're all right. And then I got heckled by my squad mates too, telling me like, oh, you're up there sleeping on the job while we're over here fighting. But you know, there's a lot of similarities, I think, in that situation to kind of where we're at as a country and as a Christian community and as a church to nowadays. So you can turn on the news, you can talk to people, you can even look at people nowadays and see the health and the morals and the situation that we're in. It's not, you know, it's not ideal, and it's declining even more rapidly. So a couple, probably about 2 months ago, Pastor Jesse spoke a bit about, you know, the woke agenda that is out there nowadays. And one, you know, a couple of things that I do want to say is that the root of these issues really is that we've gone from a Christian society to a secular society. And we used to be very Bible-based, strongly focused Christian country whose morality and values were all based around Christianity, the Bible. And for those people who weren't Christians or who weren't active in the church, they still grew up in a country that had Christian morals, that had Christian values, and they were still exposed to that. Whether their heart was ready to receive it or not, that's between them and God. But as a country, we're in a different course, and we're on a healthier footing than we are now. But nowadays, you hear things like toxic masculinity. Who's ever heard of that term, toxic masculinity, right? The idea that as a man, if you want to provide and protect your family, you want to ensure that your kids have a better future. You want to make sure that your community is on strong footing going into the future. That, you know, that's toxic. You're only doing that because you want to dominate society, because you want to dominate the people around you. And really, that's not the case at all. You want to make sure that your kids can have a step up that you never had, you know, and that's how you really improve things for the world. That's how you expand God's kingdom. You know, I don't think that's toxic at all. And, you know, one of the things that this big news source, The Independent, a news source in the United Kingdom, they said, you know, the way to fix toxic masculinity is to, you know, focus on your feelings as a man and to check your privilege. So, you know, focusing on your feelings, I to me, that's kind of like a mushy mouth thing to say. What does that even mean? Like, focus on your feelings? Like, I can't think, like, if I woke up in the morning and looked at my wife and said, hey, Courtney, you know what? I'm sad today. I don't think I'm going to go to work. I think I'm just going to be sad. Like, that's, that would be a sad state to be in. It would not be a good place to be in. And, you know, checking your privilege as a man, the idea that as a man, we are privileged with certain things. And you know what? I will actually agree with them on that, but I'll use a different word. I would say a blessing. I think that the fact that as men, you know, we're able to wake up and go to work and provide for our family, put food on the table, pay a mortgage, pay rent, you know, pay to keep our cars maintained, that's a huge blessing. And I would never apologize for having that ability, the ability to wake up, go to work, and, you know, in a relatively safe country and economy, that, you know, that's a huge blessing to be able to have that provided. And I don't think we should ever apologize for that. That's an amazing opportunity that we all have every day. And then another aspect, because they do the same thing, you know, men aren't the only ones that are under attack. They do the same thing to women. So I think everyone here is probably familiar with the ideas of radical feminism and abortion. You know, it's a woman's choice and an empowering option for women's health. You know, to end a life, to kill a baby that's growing inside of them, I'll always disagree with that. And I think that, you know, as Christians, one of the biggest victories that I've ever seen, you know, from when I was young, you know, and then when I was in college and when I was in the Army, every church that I had gone into that was like a true Bible-believing Christian church, every church was kind of coalesced and focused on one issue, and that was praying and protesting and being active in advancing pro-life, the pro-life beliefs and the pro-life agenda. And recently we saw, you know, a major Supreme Court victory. So to me, that's just an example of what happens when you have the power of prayer, when you focus and a community of churches, a community of believers comes together. You can have amazing, amazing things that happen. But anyway, you know, the whole idea behind radical feminism and all of this, it's, you know, you're going to empower women. And really, at the end of the day, you're just empowering women to punch a clock and replace their family with their coworkers and replace God in a relationship with Jesus Christ with their boss and their society. It's just a stand-in for a healthy Christian family. It's a stand-in for being a mother, a stand-in for being a wife, a stand-in for being a daughter, that instead of having godly focus and godly discipline, they're going to be able to do whatever they want. And at the end of the day, man or woman, we're all going to answer to God. So I would rather be on the you know, strong side with Christ as my victor, with Christ as my savior, than, you know, society telling me where I'm at in a healthy place. The other thing too that we see a lot is the LGBTQ, you know, the grooming of children and trans kids and all these other principles. It's really kind of attacking the youth in this country. In fact, a couple weeks ago, there's something called the March 8th principles that the United Nations and a bunch of worldwide legal scholars released that said kids can consent to not only changing their sex and changing their gender, kids can also consent to sexual relationships with adults. This is the United Nations that said that, and that's called the March 8th principles. So it's not, you know, it's not like some group that's way out there. You know, we've all heard of the UN, and this is something that's happened, you know, recently. You know, there's a whole bunch of other people out there that will say, you know, men can have babies, men can have periods, you know, kids don't need fathers and mothers. You can have two dads, you can have two moms, and, you know, the Christian family, the biblical household is outdated, and, you know, drag queens need access to children. They should be reading books to children. It's, you know, it's one thing I'll always disagree with, especially when it comes to children, because we really only have one opportunity in our life to grow and develop. You know, as you get older, you get more responsibilities. You don't have as much time. You don't have as much focus. When you're a child, that's the only time where you can really focus in, not only learn about yourself, but grow your relationship with God. And I would rather my kids and other children spend their time, spend their youth focusing on developing their natural talents, focused on where will my walk with God take me? What's my mission in life? Answering those big questions than any of the other issues that come up in society nowadays. And all this stuff, you know, this challenges our faith, because we look at the country, you know, I'm 34 years old, and I look at the way the country is now, and I look at, you know, the things that have changed in the military and the army since I was in, and it's night and day. It's completely different pictures, and I can imagine that, you know, my dad will tell me it's a challenge for him. You know, he says, this isn't the same country I grew up in. You know, you look at this all around, it's dark and challenging times, and we're all given our labels, we're all put in different boxes, we're all supposed to be disconnected and siloed, and, you know, you're supposed to not like that person, that type of person isn't supposed to like you, and, you know, there's all these issues and labels and everything out there, and it would be easy to give up. You know, this all challenges our faith and what we put our faith in. So you think about some of the things that in society that we put our faith in, you know, you look at the U.S. military. Who remembers the Chinese spy balloon that flew over our country? General Milley, you know, calling the Chinese and telling the Chinese, we're going to keep you guys aware of anything that's going on here in our country. You know, you could put your faith in that, but obviously, you know, they're just men. They're going to let us all down. You can put your faith in politics. You know, it seems like every other week there's some senator, congressman, or some organization that, you know, they're champion Christian values. They champion the family. And once they have a little bit of power, a little bit of wealth, a little bit of fame or clout, whatever you want to call it, they immediately their true colors show. And, you know, you put your faith in them and, you know, whether it's the military, politicians, or celebrities, there's celebrities all the time that will put out these kind of wishy-washy, but they seem to be supportive statements for Christian values or Christian beliefs. And really, it's, in my opinion, it's kind of just a naked play of ambition to generate either some more revenue or some more popularity on them. And then you see some of the movies, some of the things they support, and it's the same thing. You're always let down. So, you know, why not just give up? You know, we have our families, you know, we all probably have a few friends. Why not just give up, forget it all? You know, it's no big deal. And, you know, what I would say is we have to put our faith back in God. We have to pull away from these structures in society that were built on Christian beliefs and Christian morals and that have now shifted over to another side. We have to put our faith back in God. And, you know, an example, kind of the classic example that everyone looks at, one of the classic examples in the Bible that everyone looks at is the faith of Abraham. So, you know, I'll read Genesis 12. Now, the Lord had said unto Abram, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house unto a land that I will show thee. I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee, and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse them that curseth thee. And in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. So Abram departed, as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him, and Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. So, you know, nowadays if I announce like, oh, hey, I had an amazing job offer for whatever reason. Hey, I've got to move, I got to move down to Texas, or I got to move, you know, even you could move to Japan nowadays and be like, oh, that's going to be rough. You know, you're driving down to Texas, make sure you stay at a good hotel. Your kids are going to be hungry. Here's a couple of rest stops I'd recommend. I've driven down there before, but generally speaking, you know, you rent a U-Haul, maybe hire movers, however you do it. You know, you get down there, it's probably not going to be too much fun, but generally speaking, you move, you get it done and over with, and you're not really too worried about bandits starving to death on the way there. You can get medical care if anything happens. And you think about Abraham going from Iraq over to Israel in right as the Stone Age was transitioning into kind of the Bronze Age. Probably not too many sheets on that trip over there. Probably takes quite a bit of faith. Probably not the smoothest transition when you're herding large flocks of animals hundreds of miles. But at the end of the day, Abraham didn't hesitate to act. He didn't hesitate to act on his faith. He didn't hesitate to act in moving out there. And there's all sorts of examples in Genesis where God calls him and Abraham has to act. And whether that's short-term situations where he makes a decision based off his faith in God, acts and sees a blessing or sees the will of God carried out, or it's a long-term decision. You know, moving is definitely a long-term decision. Having that faith that his wife would eventually have a child, that was a very long-term test of his faith. And I think about it in my own life. I remember when we decided to homeschool. My wife, Courtney, told me, you know, due to the situation, public schools nowadays, due to, you know, just the general direction of the way society is going and kind of the technology and everything that's available to us, you know, we have to seriously look into homeschooling our kids. We have to look at that as a viable option because it's not the, it's not the way it was even 20 years ago. You can be connected in, you can have all sorts of abilities with homeschooling. It's not the same challenge that it was. So it's something that's accessible to a lot of people that previously it wasn't, which I think is a great thing. But that was a, you know, a very long-term call to faith for us, because she made that decision when Anna was about a year old, and she asked me my opinions on it. I said, you know what, if you feel like God's spoken to you about this, I'm going to support you 100% in doing that. But we had to kind of build our lives and look at our lives in a unique lens through that, through a long-term lens of how are we going to do this from preschool all the way through high school graduation. Set them up in a way so that when they graduate high school, they're able to go into a job. They're able to go into college. They're able to have success. And, you know, that takes quite a bit of long-term planning. And it's a test of faith there. Another instance that I would say is in a short-term test of faith, like I said, is going back to kind of that situation. I had faith, you know, this is almost a worldly example, but, you know, I had faith that at the end of the day, you know, God would see me through it. Eventually, my squad leader would wrap his head around the situation, maybe get a little bit of ammunition, that, you know, it would all work out. That was a very short-term situation. You know, there really wasn't much planning that goes into it. And I think there's examples of that in our lives every day, where we have small windows of opportunity of where we can act on faith and we can act on what God tells us, whether that's Him moving our heart or Him directly speaking to us. We have examples like that. One thing that I will say is, you know, that plays into kind of what I said, don't give up the faith and don't give up the fight. Because when you have the faith and you believe that God has a plan for you, God has a plan for your family, God has a plan for your community, God has a plan for your country, when you believe that and that faith doesn't waver, even if you're in dark times, even if the country seems in dire straits, even if it's stressful, homeschooling children, working, and then everything else, you know, you have faith that God will see you through to the end of it and that it will all work out because you're carrying out God's will for your life. And, you know, I use the homeschooling example, but there's plenty of other examples with that too. So there's the parents who, for whatever reason, they can't homeschool. And you have, you know, one parent works the day shift, one parent works the night shift, and they do what they have to do to make sure bills are paid, their children are taken care of. And they're extremely active with their school boards, with their local classes, with their children and everything, making sure that those insidious agendas aren't creeping into their children's heads. So, you know, and I have an immense amount of respect for those parents who the last thing they want to do after working an 8 to 12 hour shift is go to the school board meeting and say, no, you're not going to read a book to my 6-year-old about a man wearing a dress and wanting to use the children's bathroom. You know, the last thing they want to do after working night shift is on a Saturday go to the local library and say, we're not doing drag queen story hour. This is something we're not going to do. So my hat goes off to those parents. And, you know, I say that because our mode of action was homeschooling our kids. Every family, every person, God gives us all unique abilities, talents, and situations that we've been in. So for my family, that's what works for us. But there's plenty of ways that parents and families are active out there in the community. And, you know, that's being in the fight. We can't just isolate ourselves. And, you know, I'm a Christian. Eddie's a Christian. Duke's a Christian. Drew, Micah, you know, we're all Christians here. Bill, Joel, we're, you know, hey, you know what? The whole world's going crazy. Let's just go. And we're all going to, you know, the weather's nice in South Carolina. We're all just going to pool our money together and never talk to anyone else and, you know, kind of hang out and do our own thing and never have to worry about that. That sounds like a good plan, but that's not what God calls us to. And one of the verses that I think about when it comes to kind of the fight as a Christian is 1 Timothy 6:12. Fight the good fight of the faith. Take hold of the eternal life to which you were called when you make your good confessions in the presence of many witnesses. So we're called to fight the good fight of our faith. So it'd be a lot easier if we just kind of isolated ourselves and said, you know what, I'm not gonna talk to you. You're not a Christian, or I don't know you. So hi, nice to meet you, but go away. It'd be a lot easier to kind of isolate ourselves. You stay in your own community, and you never branch out. But that's not what God's called us to do. And Matthew 28:18, I think most of us are probably familiar with those verses, the Great Commission. And then Jesus came to them and said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I'm with you always to the very end of the age. So Christ himself told us, you know, we got to be getting out there. There's plenty of ways for all of us to get out there. And one of the things that I think about is, you know, when I was in the Army, you had to be equipped for the fight. So there's verses that talk about, you know, putting on the armor of God. So if I was walking outside to go on that patrol, if I was stuck in that situation I described earlier with a water gun and, you know, a couple baseballs instead of grenades, it probably wouldn't have worked out too well for me. I wouldn't have been equipped for success, right? But I felt in those situations, you know, tough situations, I always felt that we had a chance to come out on top regardless of what the odds were, because I felt confident that when we left the gate on a patrol that we'd be able to go out and we could find, fix, and destroy the enemy. I felt confident that with a rifle in my hand, with a squad of soldiers, we could go out and survive and live to fight another day. And that wasn't because, you know, we watched a bunch of Arnold Schwarzenegger movies or, you know, pumped up from lifting weights and just ready to go. It was because we had all gone through the same basic training. We had all gone to infantry school. We all understood our tasks, our roles, our natural gifts. You know, I'm a bigger guy, so they loaded me down with machine gun, a bunch of rocket ammunition, and a whole bunch of other stuff. Then there were other guys who, a little bit smaller than me, but very fast. So they didn't carry as heavy a load, but they could be a lot more mobile in the battlefield. And it's the same way with God. We're all equipped differently, but we all have that same baseline belief in Christ as our personal Savior, the belief that Jesus is Lord, and our different talents and abilities, different situations we find ourselves in life, allow us to help expand God's kingdom here on earth, kind of go out and have that fight. You know, we have to go out and do that. And that's one of the challenges, especially nowadays, because you see it on social media, you see it in the news, you see it anywhere. If you go and we protest abortion, you know, especially back in the day when that was extremely controversial before the pro-life movement, Christians would get locked up and thrown in jail for a couple nights for protesting that. Nowadays, you go down and you protest a drag queen story hour. You protest certain books in a library marketed towards six-year-olds. And, you know, you're going to be slandered as some hateful bigot. You know, this guy just wants to wipe everyone out. And like you're some sort of like crazy person, really. You're just saying, I'm not going to let that ideology be exposed to my children. I'm not going to let it take root in my community. And if I see it, if I hear about it, if I see it, I'm going to let it be known that I disagree with it. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, we live in a free society, but we're restricted in ways we can act because we work within these social norms. So I completely get it. It's debilitating. If you go into work and you say, like, you know, it's whatever awareness month, it's this, it's that. You say, you know what, I'm a Christian, I disagree with that. you're ostracized, and it's a challenge. So we all have to find our own fight that we have traction with, that we can do it in a way that moves God's word forward, that moves things forward. But the challenge is to do that in a way that doesn't alienate people. And it seems like we're on the outside looking in of society now. As the way things have changed over the years, it feels, like I said earlier, it feels like we're almost in a different country. You know, it's tough to relate to people. You see the youth believe certain things, and you're told, oh, the youth is going crazy. And then you're also told, you know, a lot of people will talk about, like, the baby boomers, like, oh, they had these golden years, and they, you know, society will never be at that level again, and we need to just let them fade off into, you know, fade off as they age. And I would disagree with both. I think we're always going to be challenged with a new generation. The challenge is to bring that new generation up, to give them better opportunities, you know, than I would have had, to give them a better society to inherit. We're also challenged to take care of the elderly. We're challenged to take care of people as they age. That's going to be a great, in my opinion, that's going to be one of the greatest witnessing opportunities in the next 20 years, is that as one of the largest generations, the baby boomers, as they age, their children, no offense to any baby, you know, my dad's an aged baby boomer, so no offense to anyone in here. But, you know, as people age and they see society changing, we want to let them know that their work, that their belief in God, or if they didn't have that and they're looking for that later in life, that it's not in vain, or that it's not too late to come to God. It's not too late to come to Jesus. And you want to let the youth know that, you know, life is hard. Any way you cut it, life is going to be a challenge. But you can live your life with meaning and with purpose through a daily walk with God, through relationship with Jesus Christ, through having Bible-based beliefs that you're willing to stand for, that no one will knock out of you regardless of what life throws at you, you know? And that's our challenge, is getting out there and reaching those people. And that can take many forms. So if I worked in a chemical plant in New Jersey for about 2 years when I first got out of the Army. And if I would have went around, you know, with a sign and passing out Bibles to everyone as we're like fixing up stuff in the chemical plant and doing maintenance, people probably would have thought, and rightfully so, probably would have thought I was a little bit crazy, probably would have thought that I should have focused on my work instead of what was going on. But on the same note, there was an older gentleman there by the name of Gary, and he never saw him without a smile on his face. One of the nicest guys I had ever met. Went out of his way to get to know people on a first name basis, get to know some facts about you, would talk to anyone. And during lunch, you know, he'd sit there, he'd talk with you, you know, ask you questions, just a nice guy. And then his way, and apparently, you know, he had worked there for 30 years, and apparently he had always been this way, but he'd sit down, he'd have lunch, and he was a Christian. And you could tell just by the way he acted, by the way he carried himself, by the joy he had, by, you know, the fruits of his labor, not only as a worker, but as a person, you could tell that there was something special about him. And I remember talking with him, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm a Christian too, Gary. And to me, that opened my eyes. Like, you know, that was such an effective form of witnessing, kind of being there in the moment, knowing that he's going to see the same people day in and day out at work. And his example of living as a Christian is going to do more to win souls for Christ, to build confidence in living as a Christian, maybe if you already are on your wayward path, but seeing him just being there, being present, and that example is going to do more than maybe coming in and browbeating people every day. But on that same note, there's opportunities that we'll only have once in life, that we'll never get again. And when you have that shot to talk to someone about Christ, when you have that shot to, you know, ask someone if how their walk with the Lord is going, you have to take that. A personal example for me, you know, I have two. I remember on my first deployment, my roommate was a guy by the name of Hernandez. So his dad was actually a pastor, but Hernandez was one of those people that, you know, great guy. He was one of those people that he was like, oh, well, my dad's a pastor. You know, I don't like hate God. I'm not an atheist, but I'm spiritual. I'm like open to all this other stuff. And I'm like, and he asked me my opinion on it. I was like, dude, you're like talking about crystals and all this weird stuff. Like, that's not me. It stops and starts at the Bible with me. That's where I'm at. And, you know, we were still friends and managed to get along. But, you know, he asked me that, and I just told him that. He called me about 2 weeks ago, and he's getting ready to get married. You know, he's kind of, him and his girlfriend are excited. And he called me, and he was like, dude, remember that conversation we had when I was telling you, like, oh, I like to burn incense and have my crystals and connect with stuff? I was like, yeah, you and your girlfriend still doing that weird stuff? He's like, no, man, listen, like, I live in Kentucky now, and I got to tell you, you were so right about everything, just about, like, the way, because we would have, you know, some long talks and different ways society was going. He was like, you were just so right about that. You know, I cracked open my Bible and, you know, reconnected with my dad. And like, it just feels good to be on that good footing again. To me, that was an opportunity that I took with him, risked alienated one of the guys in my squad, a good friend, but I'm happy I did it. You know, it worked out. And also, you know, when you're young and you're in an all-male infantry squad and things like that, you know, people will rib you and stuff, but it's worth it if you're taking your licks for Jesus. No big deal, really. Another situation that I think about where I dropped the ball, I didn't do it, I wasn't up to the task. My second deployment, I was a sergeant. I was pretty strict gentleman when I was a sergeant. I was pretty strict with my soldiers, pretty strict with someone that was not deployed, that was inexperienced. And I was that way because of some of the things I had gone through on my first deployment. So we had, in an infantry battalion, which is about 400 to 600 people, depending on the infantry battalion, out of that, we had 38 killed in action on that deployment. So we had about 10% of people, we had a 10% chance on that deployment of getting killed. And then we had about 20% of the people there, separate from the KIA, that lost limbs. So you're looking at, if you're in an infantry battalion on that deployment, you have a 30% chance of not going home or not going home in one piece. And you learn certain things that keeps people alive. You learn certain things of how to conduct yourself, how to keep your weapons clean, tactics that you can do, tactics that the enemy does. And, you know, the speed of combat is quick. You know, it's a blink of an eye. And you don't have time to sugarcoat things, to be nice or anything like that. It's, you know, do this, do that. And the niceties kind of go out the window. But I remember on my second deployment when we were getting ready to go out the gate one time, he was a good friend of mine, but I kept the relationship with him professional. His last name was Landis, and he was reading a Bible. And I said, oh, are you a Christian? And he was like, he looked at me, and he was very, like, bright-eyed guy, very excited. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm a Christian. Are you Christian, Sergeant Davis? And I was like, I am a Christian. I said, but I am a Christian. You know, it's good that you're reading the Bible right now, but I got to make sure everyone else is dialed in for this patrol going on. And I missed that opportunity. It still bothers me to this day because he never came back from that patrol. He died about a day later when we were on it. So he got hit directly in the chest with an RPG rocket. And happy that I got to connect with him. I was about 15 feet away from him when that happened. So I think about that and how in the heat of the moment, one way or the other, whether that's preparing for what you're going to be doing in life, what you're going to be doing for the day, we have to find ways to take time and seize that moment for God, because you never know when that opportunity will happen. And that's just not a combat situation either. You know, there's plenty of times where I'm sure where you think to yourself, oh, I'll talk to Joe about that next week. I'll talk to Cindy about that next month. And, you know, even just driving a car is a dangerous feat. And you might never have that opportunity to talk to them again. So when I say we have to keep the faith and we have to keep in the fight, there's multiple ways to do that. And you can look at, you know, the example of the gentleman I worked with Gary, who pretty much knew who he was going to see day in and day out by being a living example and gradually progressing people down that walk with Christ. He was able to be highly effective. And I also think in my own life, when there's opportunities to seize the day, you have to act on those opportunities. You never know what they will be. You know, I think God moves our hearts in our own ways, in accordance with our talents, you know, our own individual nature. But you have to seize those opportunities. And there will be times where we drop the ball. I know I've done it plenty of times. But the point, as long as you have the focus on God and you're working towards that, you're in the fight. You know, the other fight too, Hebrews chapter 6, verse 1, therefore, let us move beyond the elementary teachings about Christ and be taken forward to maturity, not laying again the foundations of repentance from acts to lead to death and of faith in God. So kind of that internal fight of growing as a Christian, you know, and people get saved, you know, lots of people can be in different levels of despair, have different sins, be caught up in different ways. And, you know, the biggest focus is get them saved, get them to a church, get them to the community, have Christ work on their heart, have God work in their lives. And you can see those improvements. You know, I've seen it with plenty of people over the years. You can see those improvements in their heart and in their life. But, you know, there's plenty of, you know, plenty of issues out there and plenty of sins that people have struggled with. So some people have struggled, you know, with whether it's drugs, whether it's alcohol, whether it's an unclean lifestyle, whatever it is, plenty of people struggle with sins. You know, we all have sinned. We're all sinners saved by grace at the end of the day. But I never really like to overcomplicate the growing, the internal growth you take as a Christian, because I think there's a lot of people out there much smarter than me that have studied it more in depth than me. And really, I think Pastor Jesse's talked about it before. If you read the Bible in its entirety every year, you pray and you walk with God daily, he'll take you where you need to be. He'll move your heart to where it needs to be. And you'll continue that internal growth as a Christian. And then kind of putting it all together here. You know, the situation can seem bleak with modern society, modern times, you know, the culture and everything that's going on. But we also are in a unique position in history. You know, you tell an early Christian from Roman times, like, hey, would you rather spend a night in an American jail for protesting and, you know, eventually all the charges get dropped because they're not going to hold water anyway? Would you rather do that, or do you rather get chucked in, you know, a gladiatorial pit? Probably going to pick the American jail, you know. So we have opportunities that we've never had throughout history as a Christian church. So when you think about it, we have to seize on that. We have the ability to speak to friends and family. We have the ability to raise our kids as we see fit, to raise them up for God. But it's still a challenge at the end of the day. And we have these opportunities and these beliefs and these abilities as a church to do it, because of all the work that, you know, the preceding generations have done. And we can look at kind of the success of churches. So you can use Kids Camp as a perfect example of success. You know, this is amazing. You auctioning off everything up here. You already have 50 kids registered, you know, and you see, everyone can see that success. You know, my daughter came home from Kids Camp last year, and she's like, every day she's asking me, like, when does it start? I'm looking forward to that this year, Dad. When does it start? And I think to myself, like, all she knows, all she thinks about is the success of it. She doesn't see the late night that goes into it, the, you know, weekends of work that everyone puts into it, the amount of time and effort that goes into it from, you know, the church, not just for each individual summer, but the decades that it took to arrive at that. And people will see that destination and think, that's where I need to be. But they may shy away from putting in the work. And I think our church has never shied away from putting in the work. You know, everyone here has been extremely supportive of myself and Courtney when we've had, you know, when we miscarried last year, when she miscarried last year. You know, it would have been too easy just to send a text. You know, we had meals, we had people really helping us out. And then the same thing with our children. For me to be able to take my daughter to a Christian camp, know that she's in good hands and not worry about it at all. Like, that's an amazing thing, you know. That's an amazing service to parents, to the community, and to be able to have that. But there's a lot of work that goes into it, and that work is obviously, you know, that work is directed by God. You know, it's very obvious that the fruits from it, that God's hand is in all of that. To kind of conclude, what I'd like to say, you know, if you're a young man or young woman in, you know, growing up today, you know, getting your life together, starting out on your mission, the challenge isn't going to come from, you know, from what I've seen, the challenge is going to be coming from lack of opportunity. You can still go out there and do, you know, pretty much create your own destiny, especially with the talents, the abilities that, you know, God has placed in everyone. The challenge comes from when people see someone doing well, and especially when people see someone doing well that's a Christian, they want to run you down. They say, you know, we'll see a young father working three jobs so his wife can homeschool the kids, and say, oh, this guy's working as a janitor, a maintenance tech, and then he fixes cars on the weekends. Like, what do you know, man? Just, you know, hit the easy button, throw those kids in public school, make your wife go to work. You know, what do you know? And then, you know, the same thing, you know, when people do make it, when people become, you know, they become a lawyer, they become a doctor, they work in some sort of professional field, it's almost like they're supposed to be encapsulated in some kind of inside joke and look down on those backward Christians that they grew up from. And like, now you're in on the joke with us. Like, oh yeah, you might have grown up with that, but can you believe that, you know, these Christians actually believe that? And it's a challenge for all of us, because the world wants to run you down. The world wants to take everyone, you know, look at our way of life, look at the Bible, you know, mock the Lord, mock what we do, mock our families. But that's how it's always been, you know. That's how it's always been for the church throughout history. They've always been persecuted. You know, Rome persecuted the church throughout Europe, and, you know, there were persecutions. There was a time where you'd get put to death for reading an unauthorized Bible in Europe. Nowadays, the worst thing we're looking at is some guy's going to make fun of me and tell me I'm toxic masculinity because I want to go out and work a job to provide for my family. I can take those arrows and slings all day. But, you know, God gives each of us our own individual talents and abilities. And kind of what Micah talked about the other week with sports, you know, there's certain talents and abilities we have and then certain things we won't have. So I always liked baseball, but I can't hit a baseball good. I can't throw a baseball good. So my dad told me, he's like, look, Tom, you're a big kid. Like, just go play football. And it kind of worked out for me in the end. But as we navigate these uncertain times, if we keep our focus on God and we take action to manifest those abilities and those talents that God has, there's nothing really that can stop us as individuals with faith in Christ, as a church centered around strong biblical beliefs with individuals with faith in Christ, and as families that aren't going to let anything hold back our children or anything hold us back from going in the future. So with that, I would say, I think we are all aware of the challenges faced here in society, but we all have unique talents from God, and we all have the ability to pray, reach out to God, and kind of still manifest our own destiny and see a better future for the world and for everyone else. I mean, we all know how it ends. Eventually, Jesus comes back. We're just filling in the gaps until then and trying to make it a little bit better place. So thank you for the opportunity this morning.